Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts, Mark Zielinski, Jeremy Duval, and Rob Phaneuf as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Ben Stoddard.
I'm Jeff Swan.
I'm C.L. Werner.
And I'm Mark Zielinski. Welcome to another episode of the Narrative Workshop. Tonight we are joined in the workshop by two experts with regards to the Trident Realms. Very excited about this. So today we're going to be diving into the background of the Trident Realms, both from the Army book fluff and C.L. Werner's story featuring the Trident Realms from the Kings of War anthology, Tales of Mantica, Edge of the Abyss. And yes, I am very excited about this because I got some Trident Realm models laying around that I've always wanted to work on. But first, before we get into that, we have to introduce our guests to the Countercharge audience. So Jeff, when was the last time you were on the show, buddy?
Oh, I've been on a couple. I think I did one of the very first ones with Dan King. I think it was like a herd review back when like everybody was still making their way over to King's from the Sundering. I did a List Builder Studio for Trident Realms, and then I guess this will be my third time on, or fourth. I can't remember. It was something like that, but yeah.
You have an open invitation anytime, Jeff, so just stop on by. So
it kind of seems that way.
So for somebody who doesn't know who Jeff Swan is, why don't you give us a little snapshot?
We have a podcast called The Beer Phase Podcast, and that's with Mark Cox, myself, and Ryan Smith, all people you probably know. The Beer Phase on Podbean or on iTunes. It's all one word. But yeah, we're just three TOs from Texas, and we talk about beer a lot and the hobbies we do. But on top of that, you probably seen me at a lot of GTs and fairly competitive player, always end up at Masters. And you probably also know me because I just recently took over the rules committee spot when Jason Mormon took a step back for the time being. Yeah, I'm just kind of like all over. You probably know me from literally anywhere, but I always try to get out to the different regions every year and play tournaments in different regions so that I get to meet everybody and spread the good gospel of Kings of War.
Do get around quite a bit. So you're originally from Cali though, right? So you're hitting the West Coast regularly.
Yeah, I'm originally from Orange County, California. Grew up in Huntington Beach, and then I moved out to Texas 7 years ago, almost eight now. So, yeah, it's a different scene, but it's really nice, you know, good. There's a really good community out here in Texas. So, you know, really fortunate to have a bunch of really top-end players. And I like to play competitive, but I also like playing fluff stuff, obviously. So, Trident Realms, right up my alley. I love Trident Realms. Probably my favorite army out of the four that I have painted and the seven I play. So, but yeah, I'm totally excited. It's going to be a great episode. And for all those that really like the episode, we did a Trident Realms Tactica in review for how to play Trident Realms with an entire list breakdown with some of the top players in the world for playing Trident Realms. So a little Tactica, if you like, check that out on the Beer Phase podcast. It's about 2 hours long and kind of breaks down all the units and how to play them. And yeah.
Do you remember what episode that was, or I'll put you on the spot?
Maybe like 20 something. But it says right at the top, says Trident Realm Army Book Review. So we had a couple good dudes on. So,
well, we'll go ahead and find that link door, and we'll put that in the show notes. If you guys are interested in that, you can check it out. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, excellent. Clint, even though you need no introduction, there may be a few folks on the planet who have not read one of your many books. Please go ahead and introduce yourself to the Countercharge audience.
Yes, I'm Clint Werner. I write under C.L. Werner. So far, I've got about 30 books with Black Library under Warhammer Fantasy Battles, Age of Sigmar, and Warhammer 40K. I've also written novels for Wild West Exodus and short stories and novellas for The Iron Kingdoms and Beyond the Gates of Antares, and most recently, Kings of War.
We're so glad that we were able to steal you away a little bit and write some Kings of War novels. So we're very, or at least we got a short story so far, but we'll discuss that other bit of news that was just released later at the end of the show. But is there anything else that folks should know about you? Do you play Kings of War at all, or do you got any wargaming, 40K, something? You're such an icon in the gaming hobby.
Oh, I don't know about an icon, but no, I am... You know, that's my roots, is coming out of the gaming RPGs, from Dungeons and Dragons to Call of Cthulhu, and then later into tabletop with the Warhammer Fantasy Battles and Mordheim, some of the skirmish level stuff that they've recently released. As far as Kings of War goes, I've gotten into Dungeon Saga, but I haven't dipped into the main game itself yet.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Well, I mean, hey, we're more than welcoming to have you come and play with us anytime. So are you planning on going to Adepticon in 2019?
I'd like to. It's definitely in the cards.
Well, it's become a real big GW show, so hopefully they'll get you back over there. So that'd be terrific.
Well, I was blown away by how big Adepticon has been getting. You're away for a few years, and it seems like it doubles up in size.
Oh, yeah. We'll be going to Adepticon. I think the whole crew is going this year. So, yeah, it's hard to get a hotel even now. I mean, Adepticon is really blown up. I can actually see them moving to a bigger venue sometime down the road. It's getting that big.
Yeah, last time I was there, it was amazing. Every time you turned a corner, there's another long row of tables and people playing games.
Absolutely, and we had Warhammer TV going and everything else, so hopefully we'll get our MTV, or as I call Mantic TV, so one day we'll get our MTV. But yeah, it just keeps building on strength, so how did you go ahead and get hooked up with these guys at Wing Tassar?
I've done some work for Wing Tassar with Brandon and Vincent Respond before. They were the original publishers of the Wild West Exodus line of novels. And through that, we got into Starry Bogow, which is kind of a home setting that they've developed in a sort of fantastical 15th century Poland. And once the Mantic project started coming along, I expressed some interest in becoming involved with those. And so far, I've managed to get into two of their anthologies.
In your story that you wrote for the Tales of Mantica, I have a couple of them because... Honestly, the feedback's been coming back that your story has been one of the top favorites of that anthology. And you had some really cool things in there. Personally, and this has been feedback that we've gotten from a lot of people in the community, is your portrayal of the Empire of Dust and how they're trapped souls, that they're conscious of what they're doing, but they can't really do anything about it, which is a really cool concept. As this is a Trident Realms episode, I'll jump to the Trident Realm question. You portrayed like a small section of the Trident Realm and the characters that are part of this underwater kingdom. I was curious as to what vision do you have of the Trident Realm? We're given such a small view of them. So I'm like, is it a grand civilization that you see with them hidden beneath the waves, or is it more like a group of tribes? So basically... Are we talking more like Little Mermaid influences, or are we talking more like Moana kind of thing, where they're kind of like isolated groups that travel around?
Kind of ironic, but sort of the overall feel I got for the Trident Realms was more almost like the British Empire at its height. Okay. Have these sort of individual cultures under the sort of great umbrella of the Trident Realm. So, like the Thule, for instance, are still doing their own thing. They're at lower depths than the Naiads and some of the other races that constitute the Trident Realms. So they're sort of independent but joined in a sort of mutual defense sort of relationship.
That is a cool idea. That concept hadn't even occurred to me until you pointed that out. That's actually a really cool idea. So in that vein then... Linking into that, you mentioned the Thule, so I've got to ask, you show an interesting relationship that you portray between your character Sarius and the Thule that comes to like deliver a message for him. It seems almost like, and I mentioned this earlier in the episode, but it seems like the Naiads, or at least Sarius here, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, it seems like they don't trust the Thule, or at the very least they're suspicious of them. And is that correct? And or if it's not, What was the kind of thoughts that you had behind them?
Uh, my thought with the Thule is that there is that kind of distance to them where they're not really a part of the Naiad society. They're off doing their own thing. So that's there's that kind of distance there where they're this strange, exotic people that, you know, they're not even sure exactly how the Thule think. But in the end, it's almost the Arab proverb of, you know, you and your cousin against a stranger.
All right, Ben. Hey, why don't we go ahead and save some of that for the book section that's going to be coming up next. So, but hey, Ben, you're our tour guide for this episode. So are you ready to start our journey?
Sure am. We've got a lot to go through. So
I am looking at your notes, my friend. So, wow. All right. I didn't know there was this much written on the Trident Realm. So I'm very excited.
Me neither.
To see what you came up with. Well, feel free to chime in, Jeff, as Ben goes through here. But all right, Ben, why don't you get us a going?
Yeah, looking through all the notes, it seems like there's a lot. And I honestly didn't touch on most of it, especially with like unit entries and where things come from and all that kind of stuff. There's a bunch of stuff that is just mentioned in passing or just kind of comes up a little bit. So probably a few things that maybe a couple of you Trident Realms players out there may want to hear in this and didn't hear it. If you notice anything that I missed, please feel free to let us know and I'll make a public announcement. Not that anybody listens to me, but hey, I'll do it anyway. So going into the origins and the history of the Nereidicans, it's actually kind of interesting because they share the same origin story as the Herd. So they're both made by the dark half of Chiron. If you remember from the Herd episode, he's the Celestian he's a very interesting character. And I'm going to get into a bit more about this a little bit later on, but he was split into the dark halves, but he's one of those Celestians that the dark half and the light half have the same name. And so the dark half created all these twisted creatures and brought them into being kind of thing. And then the good half seems to have, well, he came in and basically rescued them, and that's how we get the Herd. But that's also how we get the Trident Realm and all the Naiads and the Placoderms and the Thules and that. And the difference being, though, is that with the land-based creatures like the Beastmen and all that kind of stuff, when he rescued them, they didn't have a place to go. But the underwater creatures that were created, so the Naiads are basically Beastmen, they were able to retreat down into the depths of the ocean. So, and it says that they retreated to the depths of the seas for centuries. And while they dealt with this new transformation, they had this new awareness that they had brought on them because of Chiron's meddling, basically. However, the Uncharted Empires book implies that they were basically abandoned during this time when they were down in the depths. And so there's some suggestion that they kind of seem to resent or have some bitterness towards Chiron, their quote unquote father, which would explain why they don't have like an avatar of the father in their list or anything like that. They do, however, are very strong in mentioning that they have a strong tie to Mother Earth, which also hints that it could be someone other than the Green Lady. And so there's some interesting dynamics that work there based off of what they've set up between the Uncharted Empires and all the various books that they brought out with them in it. It tells us that when the Nereidicans finally did emerge from the deep, they're originally a unified empire. So they were one empire when they came out, or they formed into one empire. It's not very clear on that point, but they did join with the forces of good, or the forces of people who didn't want to freeze to death. And they fought in the war against Winter, and they were part of the armies that helped defeat her. But when Winter fell, it fractured the Nereidican Empire into at least three parts. There's three major kingdoms. The books don't give these kingdoms a name or anything along those lines, and they don't specify whether there are minor kingdoms that exist beneath these three major kingdoms or whether these three major kingdoms are it. So that's kind of open for interpretation, but it did split into three major kingdoms. This was caused by the melting of Winter's glaciers and the creation of the Infant Sea, it says. Now, here's where we can only speculate what caused this division. But it might be the creation of the new territories by the Infant Sea and the lack of a common enemy and the fact that they didn't have Winter to fight against that kept them from fighting each other. So there might be some internal squabbling or something along those lines that kind of ripped this empire apart, and they formed, instead of being the Nereidican Empire, they became the Trident Realm. they stress this because with my correspondence with Mantic, they said make sure to note that it's Trident Realm singular because the three kingdoms make up the realm for them. This also brings up an interesting point that I was thinking of while I was reading all this and making all these notes and that kind of thing is if it was the creation of a new territory with the Infant Sea, what does that mean with the Flooded Abyss? Are we going to start seeing some warped influences there creating abyssal Nereidicans? I mean, you can already see that, honestly, in the new abyssal figure that I forget what its name is. He's the crab-like one.
The Despoiler, I think.
So we already have some of that. With the Despoiler, it kind of looks like it might be something interesting. But that again, is just speculation, but it could be an interesting offshoot to go with. But yeah, the Despoiler there. Recently, the Trident Realm has become a vital role in the recent Edge of the Abyss, especially with their Thule Mythicans, who are the ones that were responsible, obviously with the Green Lady's guidance and influence, but they were the ones that were responsible for casting the spells that caused the flooding of the abyss by melting the remnants of Winter's glaciers to the north and all of that. It killed off the Thules that were responsible for that, but the Thule are an interesting entity within the Nereidican alliance, I want to say, because they are a separate species, it seems like. That exists within this Trident Realm Alliance. And we're going to go into a little bit more about that a little bit later on. They were a major force in that. Beyond that, the Trident Realm was also the primary protagonists that fought against the Empire of Dust in Hawkmon. And they won there, like they did in everywhere except for the, you know, Twilight Glades. But in so doing, they unleashed this huge beast, the Kraken. And the last thing it mentions in there is that the Kraken's heading back to the Trident Realm after having destroyed the Undead Navy. And those who woke the creature up basically are kind of nervous about this. They express a sense of dread that that's the direction that he's going. And so that's kind of where they are currently. In talking about their religion and the society that they're based off of, as far as like religion is concerned, there's different official stances that are coming from Mantic. On the one hand, in the Clash of Kings 2018 book, we have the references to the Thules going to the Great Hunt after they die. This is in reference to the Thule who are helping to melt the glaciers and all that kind of stuff. And it talks about how they reference, it's an obvious reference to an afterlife. And yet, with this correspondence directly with Mantic, when I was doing research on Trident Realms, they said the Americans are not particularly religious. They are well aware of the gods and their origins, where they come from, but they don't let it define them in the present, meaning that their religion doesn't dictate their actions, much like a theological sort of government, such as like the Basileans would have. Mantic also stated that the Nereidicans don't believe in anything after death. You do what you can in life and you're remembered for your deeds, good or bad. When you die, your body simply returns to the world. So we have two kind of contrasting concepts that we have here. Now, perhaps the idea of returning to the world is part of the Great Hunt in some fashion to them, kind of like a great circle of life going full Lion King there with you. Or perhaps the Thule, who seem to be kind of like a separate species from the Nereidicans, in more ways even than like the Placoderms and the Naiads are, or even the Mythicans of the Thule have a belief that is separate from the rest of the Nereidicans. So I'm not 100% sure where that is, but I think that's the more likely and interesting angle to view. And this also feeds that idea that they might have a little bit of bitterness towards Chiron for their creation and then kind of abandoning them into the deep ocean kind of thing. It would make sense that based off of their entries from the Uncharted Empires book, they feel kind of resentful towards him, and thus they feel no need to really revere him or worship him. And this is particularly interesting because Chiron is one of the few Celestians whose split seems to be more of an identity crisis than the creation of two new and completely different beings. Like every other Celestian, when they split, it seems like their good half and their bad half were almost two completely different beings, and you could always see them. But with Chiron, it's kind of like the whole, you know, no one's ever seen me and Superman in the same room kind of thing. It's more like nobody's seen both good Chiron and bad Chiron in the same, you know, in the same place at the same time kind of thing. So it brings up an interesting question, that what if he managed to do something similar to what the Green Lady did? And was able to keep himself together, but without that third aspect that the Green Lady had when she absorbed her sister as well. But the fact that he didn't have that third aspect maybe drove him a little bit crazy, because it's interesting to note that Chiron exists independently from what the Shining Ones of Basilia and the Wicked Ones of the Abyss seem to have as far as rules go. He doesn't seem to need worship and prayers like to exist or to exert his power like the Shining Ones do, but neither is he confined to any specific area that's connected to the Abyss like the Wicked Ones are. Like I said, he's more like the Green Lady in the fact that he can kind of go anywhere he pleases, but it seems like he's got this battle going on between his light and dark halves that has this interesting impact. And it does state that the naiads feel this more so than most other beastmen or members of the herd, because the moon affects the tides. And so there's that extra hook in there that goes with that. So it's very interesting to think what the interactions Chiron would have with the Nuridicans in this case. Beyond this, there are three obvious... So moving on from just their religion and their relationship with Chiron and the Celestians, there are three obvious sentient races. Technically, there's four, if I do my counting right, that make up the Trident Realm Alliance. I don't think these are meant to be viewed as the three separate kingdoms. Like, there's a kingdom of Naiads, there's a kingdom of Placoderms, and then there's a kingdom of Thule or something like that. And it hints that all of them are mixed together in themselves. The Naiads are more fishman than beast, and the entries from the forces of nature in the main rule book call them alluringly beautiful and terribly vicious. So the thought that comes to mind, I mean, obviously off the models, but they're meant to be seen as kind of a thing of beauty, like sirens and mermaids kind of thing, whereas the Placoderm are more bestial in nature. We know the Placoderms because of the model of Ector that we got with the Edge of the Abyss. The Placoderms are larger, more reptilian. They're very more obviously bestial in nature. And then you have the Thule, which are evocative of a Lovecraftian mixture of dwarf and squid. They're kind of an enigma in that they have so many things that's unknown about them, more so than any of the others. They speak a language which even the Green Lady cannot understand. It's foreign and alien to her. And based off their portrayals, both in C.L. Werner's story that he has, as well as in the core rule books, it seems like there's almost like a slight of a bit of untrustworthiness about them, that the other races don't quite have confidence in them or don't quite trust them, except for, you know, in the heat of battle kind of thing. Outside of that, they're very wary of their interactions with the Thule. Then besides that, there's also the River Guard, which are amphibian. They seem to be a subrace based off of what the fluff and the text reads as. They're almost like a subrace of naiads, from what I understand. I could be way off on that. They could be a separate being altogether, but they aren't actually given a name other than River Guard. They're a frog-like species. And instead of being like the deep seas and saltwater creatures, they're freshwater. They guard the rivers and lakes of the world and such as that. Lastly, loyalty amongst the Trident Realm is given first to Mother Earth. So she's the first thing that they care about, which is what drives them out of the oceans. It's what gets them up on land, is whenever anything threatens the balance of Mother Earth, that's when the Trident Realm will march to war as a unified force. Beyond that, though, unless it's something like massive world ending or something that's really going to upset that balance, they have loyalty to their king and their kingdoms next. So even above other naiads or other Nuridicans, they will fight each other. And it implies, therefore, that there is some infighting between the Trident Realm. And then lastly, after king and kingdom, they have those allies that exist outside the bounds of their kingdom. So that extends to like the herd and the forces of nature and whatnot, depending on what they need. The naiads feel a fierce need to protect the balance of the world, and they'll always unite to defend it against it. Like I said before, they have a strong bond with the herd, the forces of nature, but there seems to be some infighting between themselves. But there is a strong unifying force, which makes them their kind of their own entity. Each of the three major kingdoms has a king, and each king wears what they call a mask of Medusa. It doesn't give anything else than that, other than it's hinted at that it's kind of sacred, or that it has some kind of ritual or belief that gives these masks significance. And because the identity of each of these kings is a closely guarded secret, no one's allowed to know who the king is, basically, except for his close bodyguard and possibly friends and family. But that seems like it would be counterintuitive. What's so important about their identities? What wouldn't it be easier to impersonate the king if nobody else knew what the identity was, or manipulate the throne or any of that nature? But that right there, that's the Trident Realm. In a pretty large nutshell, I know I've been going off here for a while, so I'll quiet down a little bit and ask for any, you know, where we can talk about it some more. But I think we're going to cut to a commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Clint's story and get some more information from him about where he views the Trident Realm and how he sees it.
Wing Tusser Publishing and Zemach Books is your one-stop site for historical, sci-fi, and fantasy gaming. Look for our novels that tie into some of the best sci-fi and fantasy settings, Mantic, Antares, Blood and Plunder, and Martian Front. In addition, it is a source for historical background and material for all your historical wargaming armies. Look for our books at WingTusserPublishing.com and all good booksellers.
Hi, I'm Harris Dewsnap, and I'm from Warbond Games Club.
Hi, I'm Mikey Dewsnap, older cousin Harris Dewsnap, fellow wargamer, also from Warbond Gamers Club, and you're listening to Countercharge.
And welcome back. All right, well, next, we're going to go ahead and explore the Trident Realms through the lens of Clint's story in the new Kings of War anthology. I am one of those people, Clint, that really enjoyed the story immensely, so I really felt it the whole way through, and we'll discuss it, and we'll have you back for the Empire of Dust, so we're not going to go too heavy into them. We'll try to focus on the fish here, but great story. I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm glad you enjoyed the story.
All right, Ben, Jeff, why don't you guys go ahead and take it away?
As I was talking about earlier in the show, getting a little bit ahead of myself, I was talking about the Thule and kind of where your vision was for him, and that was... It was a very interesting thing that you're bringing up. I love the fact that you brought up the British Empire at their height kind of thing. That's a very unique take on this, which has been the biggest praise about this story, is its unique take on these two races, because it could be very easy to take it and go in kind of a repetitive or a derivative kind of way from other stories and other worlds that have already been created kind of thing. But focusing in on the Thule again, it seems as though the Thule tend to be almost psionic in nature with their powers that they have. In the story that you talk about, how he kind of starts putting pressure on your main character's mind and kind of give little whispers and whatnot. It seems almost like Lovecraftian, like I've said in the past. And are you pulling on any influences of that, or are you trying to portray him as kind of like, you've already said that they're a different and a separate race or entity? So what kind of, is there some kind of darkness to the Thules, you think, or at least the Mythicans, or is there something else that's kind of going on? Because why would they interact that way? What are your thoughts on that?
The best approach to them for now is to leave them a little bit ambiguous. So the approach I was actually trying to do, especially with the Mythican, was almost along the lines of your Tibetan aesthetics. You know, some of the reputed... mystical abilities of the lamas, almost where you don't know if it's necessarily a cult or just like an extreme kind of psychology, you know, where they can almost influence those around them without them realizing what's going on.
Kind of like their charisma and stuff too, because they're supposed to be, you know, very like mystical, and like the storyline for it was that they're like slightly beautiful and mesmerizing to look at. So
really what I was going for with them was, again, sort of that Tibetan Lama kind of aesthetic from, you know, especially back in the pulps, where you had everybody going to the Lamas for some kind of occult training, even the Shadow for all intents and purposes. But I thought walking that line between whether or not it's like a psionic thing or something more mystical, or even possibly, again, hinting with Lovecraftian influences, where there's some sort of greater force that they're drawing upon.
I like that you did that, because you left enough room for there to be that mystery that kind of surrounds them. Because I think if we define that too much, that kind of takes away from it rather than adding to it. So that is actually kind of a clever aspect to take with them.
That was always one of the hard things with any setting, is you establish these mysteries, everybody wonders and speculates about them, but then if you reveal too much, the speculation and the mystery is gone.
which is why you've got 30 plus books under your belt.
And Clint, I don't know if you know this or not, but Ben is actually writing one of the novels for Kings of War as well. So he is a budding author. He'll be writing his first novel for Kings of War, and actually just in general, his very first novel. So
that's awesome to hear, Ben. Welcome to the club.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Speaking of which, do you have any wider views or anything about the Trident Realms that you thought up? Because I know when you're brainstorming ideas about a civilization or about a story or about anything like that, you always think up more ideas that influence your story than are actually clearly communicated about the story, right? That what actually finds its way into print on your page is. But is there any ideas that you thought of while you were writing the story that you thought were really cool, but because of time constraints or editing or whatever cause may be, maybe didn't make it into the final cut of the story that you thought of that would be something that you want to share with us?
Well, I really wanted to do a little bit with the placoderms, but I just couldn't figure out a nice way to highlight them in the story. And the coral giant, originally I had more going on with that, but it ended up almost like an extended cameo. And that was mainly because of the space constraints. The story itself had already run over. So when you get into that stage, you have to start looking at, well, what do I need to cut? What isn't advancing the narrative, even though it's really cool? That's unfortunately one of the casualties.
So would you mind sharing a little bit with us what you had in mind with the coral giant or something along those lines that you thought was a cool idea?
Well, I was actually going to show it kind of being raised up from the graveyard of ships, sort of highlighting, is it actually a creature, or is this more like a golem kind of a construction, sort of an arcane war engine that the Trident Realms can draw upon? Which, if it's the latter, then, you know, you can have those things showing up anywhere you've got a nice reef.
Especially if it's something that's been lying dormant for a long time and the reef's grown over top of it and it's just being woken up. Almost something. So you're saying that it could almost be something like a... Or even like necromancy in a way, it gives it a kind of a darker twist, or could give it a darker twist. That's really cool.
You have a lot of freedom, though, with the Trident Realm stuff, because it's got so much character that you can, I mean, and they're kind of vague on a couple of things. So, like, getting to start, like, Death Horse was super vague on what it was. So, like, you could write anything into it, right?
Yeah, and on a few of the creatures, they're just mentions. So there's really no detail given to exactly what they are, what they even look like, really.
Yeah, because there's so much stuff that was just kind of like all-encompassing. Like the tidal swarms were kind of all-encompassing. Noken weren't really like given a whole lot of direction. It just kind of seemed like the staple of it was like they were kind of building everything around, you know, the actual placoderm idea and ensnarers, you know, all the naiad stuff was kind of like where their backbone was going. And then they kind of like, hey, by the way, there's a couple of these other little things that they have influence over. You know?
Well, it's kind of good to have that core with the naiads, so you have something to build off of, which almost puts me in mind real early with the Warhammer Fantasy Battles. The Empire was kind of done that way, where they had their own communities of dwarves and ogres that you could draw on.
Yeah, I just thought the naiads were kind of interesting because, like, they don't really... I know that we said they have, like, a little bit of familiarity with, like, the bestial stuff from Herd. But, like, it just seems like their attitude in general is so opposite of anything that you see in the Herd. Like, they just, like, they're almost like it's almost like an elven society or something like that, where they kind of, like, have, you know, they're a little bit more pristine, more noble, rather than just, like, purely bestial, you know what I mean?
Well, you kind of see that in the aesthetic to the models, too.
Right, yeah.
So it just made sense to approach them more as a highly refined, almost noble society, rather than going into sort of the more animalistic aspects with the Herd.
And again, that brings back your comment about where you see the the Nerdican Empire and where it was and all that. It really does make it give us a bit more to draw on, kind of thing, as to what kind of inspirations we can draw on. And like you said, you can see that in the models because they actually wear armor as opposed to most of the herd stuff, which shows them as, you know, they're beasts, basically. Some of them are barely above, you know, consciousness kind of thing of an animal. So, and I like that you bring up that it's good that they have the core of the Naiads, because that's kind of I don't want to say human element, because there's a whole lot to be said about Alien, but that's kind of who you have to build off, it seems like, is the Naiads, because I'm curious to see your take on the placoderms. Are they going to, what was your take on them, really quick?
I was almost going to do them along the lines of sort of your German mercenaries with the Roman Empire. So almost like a warrior kind of a culture. But unfortunately, I just couldn't find a good way to highlight them within the story.
And I'd love to pick your brain for my story, because that's a lot of what you said really resonates with me, and that's I'm trying to highlight this race for my book, but because your stuff is fascinating and I'm really enjoying your story, so I'm glad that they were able to pick you up for this story and for hopefully many more.
I mean, that'll be really cool too, like to see where you end up going with placoderms, because I know in this story, like, it didn't make a lot of sense to like try and go deep diving into that. But like historically, you know, placoderms are ancient creatures that, you know, lived for tons and tons of time. But basically, they are just like armored, you know, boned armored fish. You know, I mean, they're like primordial like crustaceans. So like just to have something that could be like, you know, old and dwarven-esque, but, you know, in the Trident realm would be just really cool, and have some like German inspiration, like you're saying, would be really, I mean, I think a lot of people could buy into some kind of culture like that for sure.
I think a key too is that you kind of mix aspects from different societies, and especially when you're dealing with something like the Thule, or, you know, again, going to Warhammer with the Skaven. If there's like an analog that you can use, that you can kind of draw upon for habits and attitudes, it really creates something unique.
Well, yeah, and you can have so much infighting even within that one culture too, right? Because, I mean, like, elves, like, okay, all elves are elves. They have, like, differences between them. But this is, like, completely different cultures, all living under one banner, like, just coming to, you know, rounding about each other, are rallying for the cause of protection, you know, during times of need. But you could create so much struggle within the realm and create a hierarchies and stuff like that within the realm of, you know, every race, of course, thinks that they're better than the other one, you know, so really cool stuff.
Oh, yeah, and it gives them perfect excuses. You know, you and your buddy both have Trident realms. Well, there's your excuse for having a fight.
Yep, absolutely.
Having that excuse to have a fight is a very, very important part of any war game. So it's always one of the things that I struggled with a little bit with Warhammer was, you know, how were these, you know, people fighting each other, just physically those armies going across. I guess that kind of disappears with the Trident realm, because they're like all under the sea, so to speak. So,
yeah, it'll be fun, like, when the storyline comes along for Forces of Nature, because the Naiads are part of the Forces of Nature as well. So it'll be really fun to see how they interact across and, you know, reach across the aisle to be like, hey, these are, you know, people we come to hang out with. And if they're going to be, like, two different cultures of Naiads, and, you know, see, you know, where a hierarchy may lie within there, and how the Trident Realm Naiads look at the Forces of Nature Naiads, and if they, you know, on the regular get together, you know, that type of thing. So,
or whether, you know, they see them as either corrupt or backwards. Or,
correct. Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't know. Is Mantic in the back? I think Matt Gilbert is our lore master now. Are you working with him, Clint, to kind of like stitch the story in a certain direction, or?
We're working on a project, which I'm kind of bouncing ideas off of him on that, but I don't think there's been sort of an announcement on exactly what it is, so I can't say too much on that.
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention that in the shout-out section. So from what it sounds like from Brandon, there's not a whole lot you can say about it right now. It's just very exciting, but we'll talk about more about that later. But yeah, it's interesting, because we're right in the beginning of stitching together all of the narrative for Mantica. I mean, we're literally right at the beginning. A lot of this stuff isn't written, so, you know, authors like Ben and yourself are stitching this all together. And that's part of why we're here on the Narrative Workshop is, you know, we like to have the authors on because we like to have everybody kind of coordinate the stories a little bit. So that's worked out pretty well. We've made some good connections and, you know, they're starting to stitch the world together. But fading back to the Black Library, you know, where did you come in writing the stories for the Warhammer world? Did you come in near the beginning, near the middle, near the end?
I guess in retrospect, it would have been close to the beginning. I got my first Inferno story published in 99, and my first novel was in 2001. So maybe about 3-4 years after Black Library really got going.
So you basically got to, you know, start the Warhammer world a little bit, you know, get it off to a good start and then right from there. So it sounds like you'll get an opportunity to do that here with Mantica.
Well, I think the big difference with Mantica and what went on with Warhammer is Mantica is still very much being fleshed out, whereas Warhammer already had 10, 15 years of role-playing books and army books and Citadel journals and White Dwarf and everything else that you kind of had to, number one, consult, number two, try to reconcile the inconsistencies, which they still kind of struggle with from time to time. It'd be interesting to see, for instance, how the Horus Heresy shakes out. But Mantica's got the advantage that they know where they want everything to go right from the beginning.
So are we ready to dub Matt Gilbert as the lore master now? It was Greg Smith, so I don't think he's working with Mantic anymore.
I think Matt Gilbert certainly is wearing that crown right now.
Matt Gilbert wears a lot of crowns. That dude works so much. It's insane.
Oh, absolutely. Well, hell, he just designed a new Vanguard game for us, too. So, you know, but hey, Matt, we're all counting on you here, buddy. So going through the story, too, kind of starts off with the Empire of Dust, and then you kind of fade into, you know, the story with, you know, introducing the Trident Realm and stuff like that. So the idea of the Hunters, where did you kind of come up with that?
Again, that was something that was sort of between the lines when you read some of the army entries. And it just made sense to have a sort of smaller exposure to Jouet and his fleet's arrival than have an army just sitting there waiting to tackle them. Yeah, kind of a gradual introduction to the Trident Realm influence in the area.
That harpoon that he uses in the beginning of the story, I'm not spoiling the whole thing here, guys, but so is that like a Leviathan's Bane? Did you, or is that just some other type of weapon that he had that hopefully Matt Gilbert can write into the army list later on?
I was thinking it would be like a toned-down version of a Leviathan's Bane. Something that would be more commonly used.
I couldn't figure out which weapon that was off of the gate, you know, when I was reading the story. And it's like, oh, boy, I hope we see this later. Because I didn't think it was a full-born one. And it didn't make sense that it was a, you know, ship-mounted type of weapon. So it was very interesting. It was nice that they gave you a little latitude to go ahead and develop things like that.
Again, I think it's as long as it's not conflicting with what's already there, you still have a lot of room to expand and develop.
Did you hear that, Ben? You got a lot of latitude here, buddy. And, you know, I
plan on using it.
And obviously you can coordinate a little bit with Clint now, too, so which would be terrific. So now your story is focusing on the Trident Realms, too, as part of it. We don't want to give too much of your story away, but
to put it this way, it deals with a section. Yeah. Deals with a small portion.
All right, you said enough, Ben. So
have to be careful of the spoilers.
Absolutely. Those royalties got to rack up there, Ben, so, you know.
Right.
All right, terrific. So you guys have any other questions, or do we have anything else to talk about with the story? Or
no, I don't think we can want to give away too much of it. So
go buy the book.
So, Jeff, that's a ringing endorsement, right?
Absolutely, man. Always, always buy Trident Realms.
All right, terrific. All right, well, why don't we go ahead and slide into a commercial break? We're going to come back on the other side, and Jeff and I are going to go all army on you guys, and we're going to go over his tournament list and, of course, the fluffy list for the Trident Realms.
Guys, we need a bumper to share with the other Mantic podcasts. No swearing allowed. Oh, real professional. The Fourth of Snake is a UK-based Kings of War podcast, presented by John. They want to be an individual. Dan. Nick.
Can I go to the toilet, please?
And Matt. You can find us on Facebook at OFFS and on Twitter at O4FootSnake. And you can find us on iTunes. That's 32 points of damage. Let's do a nerve check. Anything but snake eyes. Oh, for fuck.
This is Andrew Summers, Martyr of the Brotherhood, and you are listening to Countercharge.
And welcome back. All right, Jeff, this is my favorite part of the show. So we get to talk about the army, so, and what makes them go. So now, I don't know if everybody knows, but you're quite the successful Trident Realms general.
I'm one of the extremely few. So I'm pretty sure I'm the only person recorded as winning a tournament with a pure Trident Realm army. I don't take allies in my Trident Realms. So, I mean, there's a couple people who have done well with them. The guys from the episode where we did the Trident Realm review have both done exceptionally well with them. But, you know, Brian Coakwood, I believe, is the only other one that has won straight up with them. But he takes allies most of the time for it. So, but both really good players as well. But I play a different style, so it's a way different take than anybody else's Trident Realm list, because I base it off of the models. So,
well, as you'll see later, my 500,000 point lists are based off my models. So, you know, they might not be great lists, but, you know, hey, I want to put my little guys on the field. So
they're a very fun army. They're a very highly tactical army. If you make one mistake with this army, it will absolutely bite you in the butt. You really have to know what you're doing going into it, because it almost plays like Forces of Nature light. So it's got a really high learning curve and not very much forgiveness in it, as is currently. I won't give away too many spoilers, but
I guess you're on the RC, so I don't know if you have to recuse yourself when the Trident Realms comes up, but I'm assuming we'll see some buffs in the COC-19 book.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like you gotta be careful, right? Like, you gotta be careful in the buffs you do, because then everybody's gonna be like, oh, they're just buffing them because they like that army or whatnot, or because they want to sell this model or whatnot. But really, I mean, we all have the conversation. We are all checks and balances for each other. And, you know, if we put in something that the other ones don't feel comfortable with, I mean, that it gets shot down real quick. So everything gets play tested. Everything's, you know, with the intention to balance something, not just to make something powerful just because. So
do you actually have to recuse yourself when your favorite army comes up? Or
yeah, at points, yeah, you pretty much, you know, there were some stuff I'd like to have changed, and I put in a small buff, which ended up becoming like, hey, well, let's not just stop there, let's give it this buff and this buff, you know what I mean, like little stuff like that. And I was like, okay, like, awesome. I was just asking for a little, but I got a lot. But some of the stuff I'm asking for a lot and get a little, you know, and that's just because I have a lot of playtime with Trident Realms. I mean, a lot. I mean, well over 60 games with Trident Realms. So it's like it's coming from a point of I know how it plays versus every single army that is out there. I know its strengths. I know its weaknesses. And like some of the weaknesses, there's just no way around it. Like, as is, they, if you match up versus certain stuff, you may as well just not even brought an army to the table. So, which can be frustrating, but.
Well, Kings of War isn't supposed to be a rock, paper, scissors type of game.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, like trying to get those little balances in there are really important, you know, but they're Trident Realms and Night Stalkers were one of those armies that, you know, they just didn't get a whole heck of a lot of play test because they were trying to keep them close to the cuff when they were going to release them. And they were supposed to be kind of surprises. So the play testing that went into doing those was nowhere by comparison to all of the rest of the stuff. So you'll notice when they were released, Night Stalkers and Trident Realms were fairly low on the power scale when they were released. Night Stalkers have come up and, you know, have certain ways to play them now that are really good, but Trident Realms, you're not seeing a lot of them. And, you know, it's not because they're a terrible army. It's just because there wasn't a lot of synergy in the army. It all looks really good on paper, but in practicality and on the table, like, you definitely have to know what you're doing with the army or you will not win with it. You will not win. I always tell people, don't play this army for your first army unless you are totally cool with losing. Like, if you're totally cool about the with just the narrative of it, then really one of the most creative armies that you can get your hands on, because there's so much left to interpretation. So,
well, the one thing is, it's a Mantic army. So, you know, and there's a lot of holes. And the other thing is, they're cool. So, you know, you want to, I like the Worm Rider. So I really, so I bought them. I got the big heavy metal ones. So, but.
Yeah, me too.
So did they put those out in resin yet? I heard they were going to.
So the other thing you can do if you have like $1 billion is you can, you can buy a whole bunch of the Worm Rider Champion, and he is in resin. So you can buy a couple of him if you want to do that. They're supposed to be doing a resin version of it. I'm not sure if they started doing it yet. The metal ones are quite a pain in the butt to put together. But at the same time, the price point is pretty dang good. So can't really complain there. I just really want Mantic to come out with some Death Horror models, because I love Death Horrors, man. I just love them. And they come out with some cool Placoderm models like that Ector model. People will be all over that. So some really cool sculpts coming out of Mantic right now. So I'm really interested to see where they go. I mean, at least we have Water Elementals now, Greater Water Elemental, you know, little stuff like that coming out. So
I'm going to start talking about your list now, because it's like, okay, what models they're using and stuff like that. But I think you're right. Placoderms, they'll sell a ton of those. So
yeah, it's one of those things like you're talking about for the rules. You know, everybody's like, oh, you have to like recuse yourself on certain stuff. But it's so funny because everybody wanted to, you know, the RC last cockpack wanted to give the Placoderms and Snare. And I was super against it. And like, it's a buff for an army I play. Like, I was like, I was super against it because it just made them too good. I mean, they're so, so good. They went from like one of like the most underpowered units to one of the absolute best units in the game. And then I was like, you know, it's probably too much, guys. And you started seeing them pop up all over as allies and people taking them, just, you know, not even modeling anything, just calling stuff Placoderms. It's like, all right, let's get rid of that. So maybe next edition or something like that, you'll see some different options for Placoderms, a little bit more kit capability rather than just like bone stock. Maybe you can drop a shield for something, or, you know, won't give away too much, but you know, a little bit more kit capability for them. But that's really hard to do in the format that it currently is, because you have to rewrite the whole book, you know, so.
Absolutely. Well, you dropped the third Ed bomb again. So, you know, I mean, I guess that's a common, so. And that's a good chance for the rules committee to kind of rewrite points and a whole bunch of different things.
Well, I think Mantic and the rules committee are working really good hand-to-hand with each other right now. And yeah, I think we all see stuff on the same page, and Mantic is listening to what we're saying, and you know, we're listening to what they're saying, and we're just it's in a good place right now for rules and in balance. You got a lot of people on the rules committee that know what they're talking about and are interested in the longevity of the game and not having the constant power struggle of the other games we've played in the, you know, past, where we wait 3 years to, you know, get a rules question answered, you know. So
I'm very, very happy with the way the rules committee is structured right now. So I got some great members on there, and they really know the game and know their stuff. I mean, you guys play a lot, so.
Right. And it's really important to know that kind of thing, like to know how each one of the armies interacts with each other, too. Like having that breadth of capability within the other armies and being able to make the comparisons without making everything vanilla is really difficult, because you don't want to be like, oh, this army plays the exact same as this army, and this army, and this army. Well, no one's ever going to play those other armies if they're going to be all the same. You know, we want to add enough, you know, versatility and uniqueness to each one of the factions. And I think that, you know, you're going to see more of that coming very soon. So, which is good. It builds character. It builds cooler armies. Lots of really cool stuff coming. You know, I started getting to a lull with Kings, and then all of a sudden we started working on the cockpack stuff, and dude, so much crazy stuff, so much good stuff coming. So,
oh, that is so good to hear. I'm really looking forward to it. So, and yeah, Kings is in a good place. And like, even for like myself, you know, if somebody said, hey, Mark, we want you on the rules committee, I'd turn it down. because I think there's other players like Chris and yourself or Dan, you know, that just know the game. I talk a lot on the air, but, you know, you guys definitely know the game a lot better. And I thank goodness that you guys are there all the time.
I mean, we're here to help everybody, man. We try and be available, but I'm gonna tell you, it's a time investment. That's why I kind of said I didn't have time for a long time, and I got into a thing where it's like, all right, if I can commit this many hours a week, is that cool with you guys? And like, yeah, I think that'll work for us. And I was like, all right, because that's what I can guarantee I can give you. More than that would be overachieving. But it's like, I'm a business owner, so for me, I can't be doing this 20 hours a week thing. So
yeah, that little thing like feeding your family tends to get in the way here and there.
Yeah, little things, you know, little things. So
all right, well, why don't we go ahead and drift in? Do you have your tournament army list with you? This is pure Trident Realms, and can you tell us how many points you wrote it for, and kind of what your, you know, locals, tournaments, and games are usually, what point levels, and kind of go through it and how it plays?
Did you want to start with the 500 and 1,000 point list that we write for fun, or did you want to go straight to, you know, bigger stuff?
Oh, let's start with the tournament, and then we'll fade into the fun stuff.
All right, well, I will give you this super fun list that I just wrote for Tim Smith to play at Alamo in a couple weeks. He's going to borrow my Trident Realms army, so I just gave him a little bit of kind of what I play, and I have some tweaks that I generally would make to it, but it's for Tim. It's not for me, so I've made it easier to play. So for Alamo, they're doing something fun where they're doing a 1995 list for the first four games, and the last two games are going to be 2,500, so it's kind of escalating a little bit. So for the 1995 list, and basically a 2,500 point just adds a couple things to it. You have to have the same base list. So the 1995 list starts with a Horde of Water Elementals with a Brew of Haste. And generally, I like to run them with Nimble for the same reason that I brought up in our breakdown last time I talked about it for the List Builder Studio. I like to have the Nimble on the Water Elementals, but didn't have the points for it. So Water Elemental Horde with Haste. And then my backbone of every Trident Realm list, three hordes of Depth Horror Eternals. Three hordes of Depth Horrors. One has a Healing Brew, one has a Mesa Crushing, just because extra points at the end of the game. But Depth Horrors are some of my favorite units. These guys, basically, they hit like Ogre Warriors do, but they're only defense three. Other than that, they're basically Ogre Warriors, but they trade out their defensive stat for Ensnare. So essentially, you've got Ogre Warriors that have plus one breakpoint and are fearless, but they give up all their defense to go down to defense three and gain Ensnare. So that's kind of how you look at playing them, because like I always say, there's a lot of things that equate to each other in this game. So if you can play Ogres, you can play these guys. Same thing. After that, I've got a Greater Water Elemental, two Krakens, a Thule Mythicin who has Surge, and an Aura of Heroism, which is really nice to throw in there and get those Depth Horrors up to Fearless 20s, because a Fearless 20 ensnaring horde is going to stay there, and it's going to hit you back, and it's going to hurt. So that's his primary function, unless he needs to surge something like the Water Elementals or the Greater Water Elemental. Other than that, you've got two Depth Horror Eternals, favorite models in the game, period. So they are basically Ogre heroes on foot. They're a Fearless 16. They're nimble. So you just run them around. They got five attacks. You can do all kinds of fun, quirky stuff with them, getting some fun flank charges and inspire your sharks at the same time. One has the Blade of Slashing, the other has the Banner of Griffin, again, because it's really important to try to get as close to that 19 or 20 fearless on your heavy hitters. Keep them on the table as long as you can so they can get the damage in. And then lastly, you have the Siren. And she's there because, you know, their point of inspiring that actually does something on the field. Siren's really nice because she can combo up with the Water Elementals and the Surging from the Mythicin, so you can pull units toward you out of their battle line that they want to be in. You can pull them towards you and then surge into flanks with your surge on your water elementals. Pretty fun little list there, and give you what it is for the 2,500 point version, which is basically you add a troop of River Guard with the great weapons instead of the shield, because those dudes bouncing around with 10 attacks and crushing strength 1 and vicious and pathfinder and fly and all these rules. They're very glass cannony, but super, super useful in the list. They fill that role of, you know, getting around flanks really well. And then you've got a horde of Naiad Worm Riders, which, I mean, are just always, always really good. They're a little fragile if you're not careful, but a horde of Worm Riders with that 4+ regen capability, really good distance on the range, Pathfinder, really solid unit, almost can run them like werewolves that don't have nimble, essentially, is what are not werewolves, but the lichens. You want to think of them like that, but you get an extra TC in there. So they hit a little bit harder, but they're a little easier to break, but better regen. And then you add a Knucker in there to support them, which is just a really fast, nimble monster that doesn't do a ton of damage, but he's really good at being chaff if you need him to, but he's also a threat in a flank or a rear. You get to double or triple those 6 attacks and all of a sudden becomes pretty good. But he's also a monster at that speed. So him being height 4 is a big deal, because you can, you know, someone's rolling around with a dragon over there that you're worried about flying around and getting in your flanks. You can go ground that dragon by hitting him. And it can't see past the Knucker to charge anything, so that forces people to have to countercharge the Knucker for a turn, and sometimes 2 turns. I've had times where dragons don't break it because it's got ensnare. So your dragon has 10 attacks. All of a sudden, even if it's a really good dragon, it's going to hit on 4s. You're only going to hit with 5 of those attacks, and if you do all of those wounds, you're only going to do 5 wounds, and he's on a break 15. You need to roll a 10 to break him. So even if you just waver him, he's still standing there in front of you and you can't see anything the next turn to charge it. So they have a lot of really good roles that they fill in there, but deploying them and using them properly and using them at the times you need to use them is what is the difference between a good Trident Realm player and someone who's just shoving stuff forward. So there's definitely certain times to use stuff in here. Just like the Krakens, I mean, they seem like they're something you want to throw into combat and smash people with, but when the reality sets in of that, they're kind of just really good roadblocks that just so happen to output some grinding damage. You learn to play them as like, I'm going to go hold this unit down for a turn or two while my real heavy hitters come in. So it's all just learning how the army works.
Very cool. Yeah, you love that Knucker. I've heard you mention him a couple of times.
I mean, it's a good little unit as is right now. He is slightly overcosted, but, you know, there's going to be some small changes coming there. But as is right now, he's a little bit overcosted when you compare him to other stuff. But he fills a really vital role in Trident Realms where you almost have to take him. You don't really have a lot of option unless you're just going to play a super grind army, because Trident Realms doesn't have any flyers. They don't have any dragons. They don't have any super fast stuff whatsoever. And so when you have a bunch of shooting that's on the board or flying units, you have very few ways to deal with them effectively. So they fill a gap that you pretty much have to take it if you want to be competitive in any way, shape, or form. But at the same time, you're pretty much throwing points into something that you know is going to die every game. If it lives through an entire game, you've gotten really lucky. So
you've done something wrong.
Right, yeah. You haven't sacrificed your stuff right. So
knowing Kings of War, it is a game of sacrifice, so it's all not coming home. You're going to be writing some letters.
That's the thing, is like the list, it works good because the Death Horrors, the Hordes of Death Horrors, they're only 185 points base, which is cheaper than Ogre Warriors by a bit. But they stick around, and I, like I've said multiple times, it's one of those things that's almost chaffy. Like, they're less than 200 points, which isn't chaff, right? But at the same time, you're not going to like cry about losing one of the units. Like, it's not a huge point investment, but their damage output capability is really good for the point investment. And you get two or three of these, like, you put two of these things in the front of most any unit, and you're going to drop them. I mean, hitting on threes with crushing strength one is nothing to scoff at with 18 attacks. You get them in the flank, and most of the time, they'll kill anything they come at in a flank. So
very, very cool. Well, it's nice of you to go ahead and lend that army out for Alamo, so.
Yeah, Tim Smith's coming out from Southeast, and he's a last second add, and he's just like, I want to play something different and just fun. I don't really want to pack an army on a plane and bring it out. You got something I could borrow? And I was like, well, my brother-in-law's borrowing my Abyssals, and I'm taking my Forces of Nature. I guess you can take my Trident Realms. And he's like, oh, okay, I would love to play your Trident Realms. Since he just played me at Masters with my Trident Realm list and smacked the junk out of me, so.
Well, the one thing he can count on is the painting score.
Right, yeah, absolutely, right? He'll know he'll get a good painting score out of it, so.
There you go. Well, Tim, you can try to go for Bloodiest General or something like that. That would be great.
I'm going to tell you, man, it is not going to be easy for him to pilot. I'll be very interested to see how he does with it, just because they have such a big learning curve to them. So
very, very cool. Well, when you're trying to build up your Trident Realm to the level of Jeff's army for tournaments, you start with 500 or 1,000 point armies. So at least I do. I like to, you know, start out with those 500 pointers and then build them up to 1,000. And, you know, for me, those are those fun, fast, furious games because, as you've mentioned before, Jeff, I somehow get do a lot of editing. So,
right. Yeah.
So there you go. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and drift into our 500 and 1,000 point list? So why don't we go ahead and start with your 500 pointer and then we'll do mine.
All right. So I cheated on your rule of no hordes because you have to put a horde of Death Horrors in every army, period. You click Trident Realms, it automatically populates. Sorry. So it has a horde of Death Horrors naked with a troop of River Guard with the great weapons instead of shields, and a Tidal Swarm to use as chaff, and a Depth Horror Eternal. And that rounds out the 500. It's kind of nice because you get a little bit of everything in there. The River Guard are nimble, little flying, little poking with the throwing weapons. You get a horde of stuff that can hit pretty good. You get a chaff, and you get a hero that, you know, inspires the one unit you care about. So
very, very cool. Now, of course, Mantic does not make Depth Horror models, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So for me, I went with stuff I have laying around that I really, really want to get on the board. And, you know, we can discuss these units there, Jeff. You can tell me the error of my ways here. But first off, I noticed you didn't have any Gigas in your list, but I got them half off at Adepticon last year. So I got a box of Gigas. So I want to put them on the board. So I'm going to definitely do that.
They're cool models. I like them.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is I'm going for the unlocks, particularly at small, you know, at small points. You know, you're going for the unlocks. And the other cool thing is you'll see at the end of this list. So I went with a regiment of the Gigas, and then I went with a regiment of the Naiad Worm Riders because I really like them. So I want to get them on the board. And then I was surfing around for low points and some inspiring just because I could. And so I picked up the Naiad Envoy because, well, he's only 60 points. So, and then to lead the group, I had a Naiad Worm Rider Centurion. So, which is very cool. And can you take a look at this list, Jeff, and tell me what the best part of it is?
Why don't you tell me, Mark?
With minimum model count, it's 6 models.
So I was going to say, I was like, dude, that is hilariously low. But you don't even need the Envoy, though, because you've got a Naiad Worm Rider Centurion. He inspires. Like, he's one of the few things that actually inspire in Trident Realm.
So what do you think I could take him out for?
Oh, you could probably do something fun in there. Maybe get some chaff, but then you're going to triple the model count there.
Hey, my goal is always that the first 500 points is low model count. So because you get the unlocks and you can paint it up and assemble it and get it on the board fast for those, you know, start and test game. So,
well, if you're going to do the same amount, you should maybe try like a Thule Mythicin, because then you could do a little bit of rally in there too. You could take the Aura of Heroism. Even for 75 points, that Thule Mythicin, he's got five attacks hitting on threes, crushing strength one and snare. Like, he's no chump.
No, he's not. And you're going to see him later. So,
all right, there you go.
So after you've gotten your core of your 500 points together, you move up to 1,000 points to play some games. So what'd you come up with there for 1,000 points, Jeff?
Yeah, so for this one, you start getting into stuff you can actually take that's got a lot more flavor to it. So for this one, I've got a horde of Naiad Ensnarers. And with I'm going to tell you, the best way to take these bros, tried it all. The Dragon Shard Shield on these guys is so insanely solid once you learn how to deploy them. But a horde of Ensnarers that can have that 4-up regen and ensnare, it's amazing, because once something charges you, you don't break most of the time, and you're going to get a 4+ regen, so you're going to regen half of all the wounds that you have currently on you. And then instead of countercharging, you can literally just stand there and pop your shield that turn and let them bounce off of you again, because you're going to go up to defense 5. They're going to do substantially less wounds. And then you're like, cool, now I'll regen again. And on my next turn, I'm bringing in all my flanking stuff. And that's just a really solid little unit. Then again, you know, you got your two hordes of Death Horror Eternal, Death Horrors and a Death Horror Eternal. And finish it all out with a Kraken, because sharks and squid, bro. That's what it's about. Sharks and squids. Shark, squid, water. That's what I'm about right there.
Well, you're going to be looking forward to that bear shark coming out, right? With the Wanderer of Barnacle Bay?
Yeah, you know I ordered that. I pre-ordered the dude. I'm on the kicks. I did the Kickstarter and everything. I'm going to put those dudes in my Force of Nature army for sure. I'm going to put them as like maybe like a Stampede or some beasts or something like that for my herd army or something like that. It should just be fun.
Yeah, I told Jonathan that he has to do those in resin so we can get them and do units out of them and stuff like that. So,
such cool little models. I mean, that was such a great little Kickstarter to get in on and see like some of the models they get, because I was like, oh man, my Tri-Realm army is totally getting some of these in there for sure.
That is awesome. So, but all right. So my 1,000 points, I went with the Naiad Ensnarers, but for some reason I only did a regiment of them. So I will have to reconsider that horde. And then I put in a Troop of the River Guard because I have River Guard models and I wanted to use them.
Okay.
And then I put in a regiment of the Water Elementals because I have them. And then, of course, the Gigas were my original 500 point list. And then, of course, I have a regiment of the Naiad Worm Riders that were from my 500 point list. The Envoy stuck around just because he did. Maybe I swap him out for something, you know, because for some god awful reason, I bought a Leviathan's Bane 50% off at Adepticon last year, too, and I want to put it in there, and I couldn't figure out a way to do it. So maybe the Envoy goes.
It's a trap. It's a trap. They're garbage. Don't do it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you guys will do a little something with War Machines, because they have certainly lost their luster in second edition. So
yeah, it's something we're looking into.
Definitely, because that is, I like the model, but you're right, it's garbage. So, you know, I mean, it's hard to put it in. So, and then next up, my Thule Mythicin, because you're right, we got to do this. And, you know, one of the things that I discovered with this too was, you know, I've got no shooting either. So, you know, so I gave him Lightning Bolt instead of anything else. But, you know, because I don't think the Heart Piercers are worth it.
Yeah, I mean, they're just such a point sink right now. We've got a couple little things coming there that I'll just, you know, they're going to be better. But I won't go into the details there. But Trident Realm just doesn't have a lot of shooting support in it, and it just plays better without much of it. So having a couple of shooting units is fine, but you have to look at them as their only objective is to put in some wounds that are going to stay. So you never shoot at units that have regen on them or high defense or anything. You're going to be your prime objective with shooting with Trident Realms is to A, waver chaff or kill chaff, or B, poke through just a handful of wounds when stuff is coming across the table, and then let your stuff get into combat and finish it off. Because one thing that Trident Realms isn't good at is just straight up shoving one unit into combat and deleting an enemy unit in one go, you know, one-to-one combat. You will most of the time lose that grind just because your defense is so low. It's really important for you to get in there, hit stuff, kill it, and then reform and brace for your next, you know, your neck to receive the next charge and use that ensnare. Because if you don't kill the unit that you're going to be in combat with, they're going to countercharge. So most of the time you should try to be playing this army in some kind of cover so that when stuff charges you, you get the terrain penalty and ensnare. So -2 to hit you is really big. When stuff countercharges you, they immediately get rid of one of those. So you're already going to be on your back foot. The biggest thing is always make sure you delete the target you're going into in one go. So that's one of the biggest things you'll learn about playing this army.
All right. Good tip. And I'm going to round out my list with the Naiad Wyrmrider Centurion, who was also in my 500 points. So, I gave him the Blade of Slashing, by the way, just for fun. So, you know, toss a couple points out there. But now, one of the interesting things is what models do you use for this army? Because you're Depth Horrors and Krakens and everything else. So, you know, obviously there's Mantic models to use, but so what kind of models did you use for your Depth Horrors and your Krakens?
I told Ronnie specifically that he's got to get some Depth Horror models out there because they're a decent, they fill a really good gap in the army, and there's not really anything else in the army that fills that gap. So I think that you really do need to have at least one unit of them in almost any army, unless you're going to just take a ton of Thule. But so for my army, it's mostly based around my shark theme, so I call it Shark Week, and it's a lot of Depth Horrors that are boarding a pirate ship that they're taking over. So my three hordes of Depth Horrors are a bunch of Wrath of Kings Pit Fighter models from Hardross, and those guys are really solid models, really good casts. Very clean, easy to put together and clean up and paint to a high quality. It's a really good cast for the dollar for sure. And I've had those for a little over a year and a half now. And the ship that I used was Firelock Games, I think it is. The Blood and Plunder, not Blood and Plunder. Yeah, Blood and Plunder. But that's a really, really, really nice ship model to base them on. As far as the Krakens go, I'm using, again, the Kulminir, not Hardross, Cavalier models. So it's a big octopus that's, you know, really nice, high-quality resin, really cool, like, mouth and maw on that thing. It looks really, really cool. Really nice model, really fun to paint. For my water elementals, I'm using the Mantic water elementals, obviously, because Mantic makes them, and they're actually really good quality models, especially for the dollar. And I've got some of those modified up and on the base. They kind of go kind of like at an angle across the horde base to make it look like they're one continuous wave at an angle across it. And then behind it, I have a elf surfer girl with a little bikini top with like a little polka dot bikini. And I made a surfboard that she fell off, and she's waving her fist at the water elementals she fell off from, but she doesn't see the shark fin that's behind her coming to bite her. So it was a fun way to say that my water elementals have the wine of elvenkind, because I put an elven surfer in there, and I just thought that was really creative. So that was fun. The greater water elemental, I did not have a Mantic one because it just came out. So I'm getting one of those on order because I really like that new Mantic model. I think I'm going to chop one of the arms off of it and put like a shark coming through one of the arms, or a shark mouth or something, like the front end of a shark coming out of the greater water elemental, because that would just be so epic to be like the water elementals launching a shark out of it. It would be cool. And then my Depth Horror Eternals and my Knuckers are shark models from Reaper. Reaper makes a model called a Were Shark. that is just so freaking awesome. I love it. It's like just a shredded up, like if you ever watched Street Sharks when you were a kid, like it's just a shredded up shark that just looks like he is pissed off that someone is in his water and he is there for vengeance, man. It's a really cool model, really fun to paint, really great detail on it. And then they have a hammerhead shark version. I love hammerhead sharks. So I use the hammerheads are all my knuckers and the Death Horror Eternals are all the wear shark. Other than that, what else do I have? The Mantic Thule are what I'm using for all my Thule because those models, if you get them in your hands, are really, really nice. I wasn't such a big fan of like the paint job online for them, but you unpack these dudes and check them out in person. The quality's really nice on them. They're pretty crisp. You could do a lot of different paint styles on them. Really good cast quality. Really enjoy those models. I just wish that they were better in game, and now they are. So I'm going to have to paint up some more of them. River Guard, again, Mantic River Guard. Models are so cool. Really dynamic poses. Anybody who's going to buy those River Guard models from Mantic, just know that if you go on the online store for Mantic, there's an additional add-on kit you can get to replace their arms. They have a trident great weapon that you can get that replaces their little one-handed spear and shield combos. You can do great weapon tridents, and that really brings that unit together, adds a lot of like cool aesthetic to it, especially because I like to take the great weapons on them to begin with, so I like to have that represented on the model. Really cool models. You can do a lot of cool paint schemes. I painted mine up like red toe tree frogs for the unit I have. And then I'm doing a couple of troops that are different colored poison dart frogs. So like some will be black with like the blue spots. I'm going to do some really neon colored troops. And so each individual troop is going to be different kinds of poison dart frogs. So just kind of playing around with that theme. Ensnarers are obviously NAAD ensnarers from Mantic. Pretty decent models. Some of the detail on them is really hard to pick out. So they lend really well to people who like to base their stuff and then wash it. So one of the techniques you can do with those guys is, you know, do your white spray paint and then do a couple layers of washes and then go in and hit your detail. It's if you're going for like bright poppy colors, you can save yourself a ton of time just by doing washes and inks and then coming back in and hitting, you know, detail. I'm not a big fan of washes and inks. But it's definitely some of the detail is so incredibly tiny on there, and the models themselves are really small. So getting in there and picking out all of the detail in there is a lot of work. So if you're doing a time-saving thing, I would really recommend washing and inking it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I didn't cover.
What do you think for tidal swarms? Do you use the little ladders?
I'm not a fan of the otters and frogs that they come with. They're just not very detailed, unfortunately. I mean, but those are just kind of like little extra bits that Mantic throws in there to be chibi about it. But Reaper has a really nice couple of like underwater familiars and fish and stuff like that. So I would recommend looking at the Reaper stuff. I think that there is a lot of decent stuff in there. Please don't go to the hobby store and buy a little tiny fish stuff that looks terrible. Sorry. Like I have to say it, like the little toy stuff that people put on it, it looks so bad. But just, you know, there's so many things that you could do. You could get little frog models and stuff. Like there's a lot of really good quality stuff out there, but I'm using the Reaper underwater pack. I forget what it's called. Underwater Familiars, I think. But it has like a little shark model, octopus, fish, like a angler fish, like a couple of different like models that are all in one pack. And then you just get a couple of those and, you know, fling them across the base, maybe build yourself a jellyfish out of some, you know, green stuff. A lot of versatility you can do with the tidal swarms for sure. But yeah, it's an army that lends itself to a lot of creativity. So the NAAD Worm Rider models, obviously, for Worm Riders are great. some of their better kits for sure. So
now you do have those Deepkin models from the Games Workshop line you could consider using, you know, if you were really stuck. So I've actually seen a couple of really nice armies built out of those. So
yeah, I'm not a fan of their aesthetic, but I could see, you know, people getting into doing it. It's just like there a lot of that stuff is like super cartoony and like it's just not the aesthetic I was going for, but I could see somebody using them for sure. There's a dude that's always posting on a fantasy page or the Fanatics page, Florian, who has a really beautiful Trident Realm army that you should check out if you guys are into that. But you can check out some of his stuff. Really high quality. He's done a lot of conversion work to his stuff. But
so that should give you a nice flavor for what kind of models you can look for. So wrapping things up, any advice for the new Trident Realms player, Jeff?
Yeah, so, you know, when you get into playing Trident Realms, you know, figure out what works for you because this is an army that is highly subjective and it's one of those things that you have to figure out how you like to play an army before you can really put together a Trident Realm army because it looks good on paper, but the way it synergizes in game is not quite the same. Anytime you're making changes to the list, play it like 2, 3, 4 times and then make changes because the list is the Trident Realm list is so difficult to get a feel for by playing one game because it's a really reactive list. It doesn't deploy like any other army in the game. It doesn't play like any other army in the game. And you just have to go into it knowing that like you're having a lot of fun with the army. It's hands down the most fun army I play. Win, lose, draw, don't care. Like, I have the most fun playing my Trident Realm army out of anything. And I'm, you know, I'm a pretty competitive player, but like, I like to let loose and just chill out and, you know, have a for fun game. And Trident delivers on that, I think, more than a lot of the lists do because, you know, people see the cool modeling and stuff that you can do with it, and they just have so much depth of flavor to the list, and it's open to so much interpretation. You could really build whatever you want, build whatever theme you want out of it. But, you know, just take a little bit of everything to get started, see what units you do like playing, and then just build around those units and give them some of the support stuff that works for you. It's not the fastest army in the game. It's not the slowest army in the game. It doesn't shoot very good. So if you're into shooting, wrong army. If you're not into getting shot a lot, wrong army. So it's just their biggest weak spot is obviously shooting because that's army of ensnare. And you don't really have any defense to shooting right now. So it's an army full of weak stuff that's low defense that has, you know, no shooting defense. So obviously, those are going to be your biggest issues. But if you play against a lot of undead players, you're playing the right army because that is an army you love to see. No shooting and hitting on fours most of the time, and then you add your ensnare in. That's a good combo. So, you know, they have really big strengths and really big weaknesses. So it all depends on the situation, I suppose.
Like you said, they're a tactical army. Good way to learn.
It is. I mean, It takes some time to get used to playing them for sure, but very, very rewarding army to play when you get it right.
Anything else you want to mention before we go ahead and slide into a commercial break?
No, man, I think we're good.
All right, folks, we're going to slide into a commercial break. We'll come back on the other side and we'll wrap up the show.
Howdy, this is Mark Cox.
And this is Jeff Swan.
And this is Ryan Smith, and we are the Beer Phase Podcast.
We're 3 TOs from Texas, and we talk about the most important phase in Kings of War, as well as other games we play, the Beer Phase.
Hang out with us and get our thoughts on hobby, the best beer available, any gaming tactics and current events in the gaming community, as well as guest interviews from people from all over the world that have the same hobbies we do.
So grab a beer and have a laugh with us as we BS about all things wargaming. Check us out on Twitter, at The Beer Phase, and TheBeerPhase.podbean.com or on iTunes. The Beer Phase, one word.
Hey
How do you know someone's from Yorkshire? Don't worry, they'll tell you. Just like me. I'm from Yorkshire. I'm Nick Williams. You're listening to Countercharge.
And welcome back. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed all the fabulous army talk there. I know it's got my creative juices flowing. So, Ben, any shout outs?
This time we just wrapped up Refugees of the Old World literally this last weekend. So by the time this gets out, it'll have been a week or two since then. But I'm happy for all the players that came out for it. We had a couple players that traveled quite a distance for that. And it was a lot of fun. We look forward to seeing as many people as we can next year. So there's that for a shout out. And once again, I just want to give a shout out to all the authors, including Clint here that's with us, that helped make the Tales of Mantica become a reality and give us a step towards having that fleshed out world we're all yearning for as narrative players in Kings of War. So those would be my two big shout outs. So thank you, Clint, and all the other authors for putting your heads together and coming up with these stories for us to build off of and for future content I'm hoping for.
Hey, and Jeff, any shout outs?
Oh yeah, man. Again, like shout out to all the people writing the stories, man. That everybody's been clamoring for a little bit of fluff to, you know, really drive forward some of those armies. And I think that you'll see a lot of people hopping on board and, you know, creating stuff around those storylines like you do with other games. Also, we just finished up the Living Legends team tournament that I ran over here in Fort Worth, Texas a couple weeks ago. A little teams tournament held in a distillery downtown in a Black Eye Distilling, and filled that place up with a whole bunch of good dudes and played some teams games and had a great time. So, you know, shout out to everybody who came out from all over the country to come join and have fun in that. We'll be doing it again next year, and we'll be having a little bit of extra space for more people. So check it out. Living Legends TT on Facebook. It's just a Facebook group. We're not doing a web page because it's kind of smaller venue. So
just do not have it on my wedding anniversary next year.
Dude. Yeah. I mean, I'll do what I can. I'll do what I can. We can change up the week a little bit here and there. I'm just trying to be on the other side of the year from Rob. So we don't have, you know, so people can go to Blue City and come to ours, because it's pretty much the same thing. I think Rob's getting ready to do a breakdown of the, you know, event, because he just came out for it. So
yeah, Rob is actually moving Blue City earlier, so, which is terrific.
Oh
yeah, so 2019 September 28th, that's a Saturday. That won't work for me, but you don't have to move the tournament just for me.
Oh, but I can move it, it's not a problem.
All right, anything else?
No man, I think we're good.
Fantastic. All right, Clint, time for shout outs. And this is where I am going to just highlight before you jump on that Zmok announced that you are going to be writing a Kings of War novel under the Zmok Books imprint. Stay tuned for more details in coming weeks. And of course, there's nothing else you can share with us, so we'll have to leave it there.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's kind of a top secret project right now. I think it'll really excite the fan base. You know, anybody that wants to know more about the basically origins of Mantica.
Nice.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know I've got my little project I'm trying to work over there at Mantic, so I may have to just touch base with you later on, Clint. So, but very exciting. I love that. So anything else you want to shout out? Do you have any other books coming out that we should know about?
I've got a handful of Black Library releases. Next one is going to be Sacrosanct, as a novella and two short stories from my demented imagination that'll be included in there. And I just had The Tainted Heart come out a couple months ago, so that one's out and about in GW stores and online and possibly in a local bookstore. Kind of spotty as far as distribution in that neck of the woods anyway.
For some reason, I always seem to find a ton of Black Library books at like half price books. And some of them are brand new, you know, like they bought them or something. I don't get it. But yeah, so if you guys are looking for Black Library books or something, you can pick them up there. Or my local Barnes & Noble seems to have them too. So
see, you've got a better half-price books in Barnes & Noble than we've got down here in Phoenix.
Well, that shouldn't happen up here in Cleveland, Ohio, let me tell you. So very, very good. Well, again, Clint, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. So For myself, of course, I'm going to shout out easyarmy.com. Can you spot Blaster on the page? Consider tossing Greg a few shekels or something like that for his hard work for the community. And I see that Vanguard is up and running up on the Easy Army site right now. So you can go ahead and check that out. Build your armies for Vanguard and hopefully get some stories, and maybe Ben and Clint will write about them for you. So absolutely. I actually think the Vanguard is kind of written for you guys a little bit. You know what I mean, Ben?
Oh, absolutely. For the ability to write or to have those kind of small scale stories, that's perfect for this kind of thing.
And unfortunately, Clint, I can't ask you if your upcoming novel is going to be about big armies and small armies, so I'm not going to bother. So,
well, you kill enough of them, a big army becomes a small army.
That's what happens to my armies on a tabletop all the time, right, Jeff?
Sure, right? Seriously.
You watched me at Lone Wolf. So.
Oh, yeah. It starts big and quickly becomes very small.
Absolutely. I so let down Robbie King's troll army. So once again, the one thing I proved is it's the player, not the army, particularly
that's
in
true.
Kings of War.
That's true.
So absolutely. So it's not point and click. It's definitely not point and click. So excellent. So, all right. Well, that's going to go ahead and do us tonight. Jeff, do you want to take us out?
Sure. Remember, keep counter charging.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.